The growth of cities in America over the last 50 years represents a response to migration of jobs into urban centers. Service jobs have replaced manufacturing. Transportation has become more expensive, further driving people toward the city center to cut costs and escape the roadway madness of traffic and commuting. U.S. cities have absorbed the changes, but there has been an attendant rise in luxury housing. Since the financial crisis, what has been fueling this real estate boom in some of America's biggest cities is cash. Principally investment cash, as people from around the world park money in investments with safe returns. That has made New York and San Francisco awash in luxury apartments and condos, which may be vacant, actually, because they're just investment properties. But can you get one of these properties? Do you have several millions? Can you settle for something smaller, perhaps? Stephanie Martin Taylor is the housing reporter for KQED in San Francisco, and Jamie Floyd hosts All Things Considered on WNYC right here in New York. We put them together to compare notes about their respective cities. In both places, success at the high end has meant real problems for real people looking for places to live.
We lived in the Bay Area for 10 years. We thought it was expensive. We talked about how expensive it was. We thought we'd come back here and sail right into something in New York City, and it was sticker shock. New York City is quite simply the most expensive place in the country to live, to rent, to own, to afford a place to be.
Stephanie, you're not going to let her get away with that, are you?
Yeah, it's the same situation here in San Francisco. When I moved out here, I had done a brief stint in North Carolina between New York and here, and huge sticker shock for me, too. I had settled into a life in North Carolina and gotten really comfy with the idea of space, and suddenly I was having to downsize and try to figure out what I was going to have to give up. Was it going to be my furniture, my dog, my car? And ultimately, I don't have a car anymore, and that's the way I can live here, is to really cut back on some things that I considered basics.
What is San Francisco going through right now in terms of housing, and what do people think about both the availability of housing and the cost of housing?
Over the last past half decade, the city has added about 50,000 people, and we're smaller than New York. So that's really, if you can think about that aspect of it, we're really jam-packed with people at this point. And compounding the problem is that San Francisco has historically resisted the idea of becoming another Manhattan. In fact, there is a word for it, Manhattanization, that's tossed around from time to time. The supply, even though we are trying to build as fast as we can now within the strong regulatory environment there is here, it's a little bit too little too late in many respects, because just the people keep coming and the prices keep going higher.
And how do you deal with Manhattanization? Well, Nicole Lindler, a young housing advocate in San Francisco, has to live with her parents across the bay in Oakland.
I'm a millennial, and I think across the board, the feeling in my circle is that a lot of people are moving back home. A lot of people are crunched with three roommates, living on top of each other. And it's just not the way that we saw ourselves kind of coming into this world and making a lives for ourselves.
Reality is tough for people in San Francisco and the Bay Area, Stephanie?
Yeah, and it always has been. As I was saying, when I moved out here, I was having to make sacrifices, but now it's just even worse.
Jamie?
Well, New York is quite simply in the midst of an availability crisis. And by crisis, I mean a housing emergency. Our population in the five boroughs is over 8.5 million people. And John, that's distributed over a landmass of just 305 square miles. So that makes New York City the most densely populated major city in the United States, with no vacancies to speak of. And when I say no vacancies, I mean no vacancies. In Manhattan, the vacancy rate is 1%, and that's just because somebody moves out before somebody else moves in. So really, around the business district, there's nothing. And the vacancy rate for the city as a whole is around 3%. So the emergent question is, how do we generate enough housing supply to accommodate all the people we want to live here or who want to live here? Now, this crisis isn't new. This affordability crisis, that's been with us for decades, too. The majority of poor renters now spend more than half of their income on housing. And in New York, we're short by 500,000 units. So even if you doubled the available affordable housing stock, we'd still be short. And that's where Bill de Blasio's new plan comes in. He's trying to create more, not just housing, but affordable housing. That plan just passed 46-0 in the city council. But of course, as with everything in New York City, John, it's controversial.
Stephanie, in San Francisco, what is the city doing to match what Mayor de Blasio is doing here in New York to try to create an increase in supply?
Well, Mayor Lee has made a strong push and pledge to increase the city's affordable housing supply. He's pledged to create or preserve some 30,000 units of housing by 2020, with at least 50% of that housing designated as affordable to the city's low and middle income families. That takes time, as I've said, though, and in the meantime, there's a lot of concern that the existing housing is going to waste. Airbnb sites, the short-term rental sites like Airbnb, are very popular here, and despite some efforts to regulate them, most aren't registered with the city. Some of those units are essentially running as year-round hotels. Also, another innovative proposal from our Mayor Ed Lee is called the Affordable Housing Bonus Program. It allows developers to build taller, denser buildings if they agree to set aside 30% of the units for affordable housing. Now, if they build buildings that are 100% affordable, they would be allowed to build three extra stories. Sounds good for many people, but also our infrastructure is strained, and some people are very concerned that the additional density will create more traffic and parking problems and further strain our public transit.
And Mayor de Blasio's plan, John, looks a lot like Mayor Lee's plan. He's pledged to create or preserve 200,000 units of affordable housing over 10 years in 15 long-neglected neighborhoods like East New York. And in fact, East New York, if you think of affordable housing as a game board, East New York is go on the game board. He's starting there. But people in East New York are worried that it's going to become the next Palo Alto, and you're going to have the Google bus going out to East New York, and Starbucks is going to come to town, and they're going to get priced out. They're worried that even the new affordable housing will be unaffordable for them, that it's going to gentrify the neighborhood, even with the best intentions of the de Blasio administration. That's the great fear about the affordable housing plan, that it really doesn't take into account the unemployed and underemployed people that have lived in these neighborhoods for decades.
Jamie Floyd, host of All Things Considered on WNYC, and Stephanie Martin Taylor, housing reporter at KQED. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.